Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. And today's episode is a little bit of a special one. Special, the right word? It's going to be a little bit of a different one. So for those of you who are long-time listeners to the podcast or follow my social media handles, Brian Keane Fitness, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, etc., you know that I just ran 230 kilometers through the Arctic Circle, which was actually a week ago now. So I've let, similar to the episode I did, 150, I think, about Marathon de Sable, about running 250 kilometers through the Sahara Desert. I let this kind of digest for a week so that I'm able to kind of reflect on it a little bit and tell the whole story. So I've been putting up bits and pieces on my social media, so you can look on my Instagram and see some clips from the event, from the challenge. But I'm going to do a full podcast today around it. Basically how I found running 230 kilometers through the Arctic Circle, how it was broken up, how it was organized. And I'm going to take some of the questions that have came in through my Instagram story Q&A to kind of use as a baseline to tell that story effectively. So this is very much a press record and talk episode, and I hope it provides a lot of value, regardless of whether you're a runner. I think, to be honest, I'm one of the first ones to admit that I'm not a runner. I only started running last year. I ran my first marathon in January of last year, which is January 2018, and we're now in the first week of March. This will go out the second week of March 2019, so I'm relatively new to running, and for those of you following me a while, you know how much I fucking hate to run, and that I very much do it because I don't like it. And setting myself up for challenges like this really allows me to kind of develop my own mental toughness and makes me a lot more grateful for the things that I do have in my life, because it gives me that reference point of when you're suffering and at your lowest points. That, you know, I love the Carl Jung quote that your roots need to go down to hell if you want your branches to reach up to heaven. And that's kind of how I feel when I do these challenges, that when you hit those low points and when life really feels like it's fucking knocking you down, either because you've made the choice to enter a challenge such as this, or you've just decided to get up a few hours earlier or an hour earlier in the morning, or you've decided to go to the gym even though you hate working out, it's building up that mental toughness and giving you that little bit of increased self-discipline that makes everything else in your life feel a little bit easier. So I'll talk through the challenge. I'll talk to a lot of the things that I got. I'll talk through how I prepared for it. And then I'm going to use the questions sent in to kind of structure this episode of the podcast. So the challenge was a 230 kilometer run through the Arctic Circle, and it was ran by a company called Beyond the Ultimate, BTU. I highly recommend them. Their organization was absolutely second to none. The way they had it set up for health and safety, the medics that were there and available, and I'll talk you through when my Achilles tore 84 kilometers from the end and how the medics literally were able to get me through that. They're an incredible company, and I recommend anyone that wants to do these extreme challenges, I would 100% recommend them, and I'm happy to put my name to them, because my goal for the Arctic was, number one, not to die, and number two, get to the finish line, get to the 230 kilometer finish line. Ironically, I recorded it on a Fitbit, and there'll be a couple of videos going out of my time in the Arctic Circle, and I recorded my sleep and my activity on a Fitbit for the 5 days that I was out there. And even though it was 230 kilometers, my Fitbit ended up coming in way higher than that, partly because I went wrong several times. There was two of us, so me and my friend Simon, who ran through the Sahara with me, and was one of the main reasons that I got to the finish line, because we were able to pull each other out of the low points. And he's a real testament to the quote that I love, that if you want to go fast, go alone, and if you want to go far, go with other people. And Simon was that person for me. That first couple of days where I was feeling really strong, and I trained very intensely leading up to this event, a lot of it indoors, a lot of it on treadmill, and a lot of speed work, but I trained very intensely for this in terms of mental preparation. I'd done a lot of work in my ice bath at home. I'd done a lot of long distance runs on the treadmill, which I actually find harder than outdoor because they're boring, and that tends to build a little bit more mental toughness for me anyways. And getting up earlier and doing things that I really didn't want to do was preparing myself mentally for this event. But when I clocked in and checked out my Fitbit at the end of the 5 days, day one, I ended up clocking in 60 kilometers, day two, 52 kilometers, day three, 55 kilometers, day four, 66 kilometers, and day five, 22 kilometers. So because of the conditions in the Arctic, you can go wrong effectively because you've got the course mapped out as best you can, and there's an indigenous tribe, the Sami people, who are incredible with this event, will lay out paths so that you're able to run so you know where you're going and don't get lost. Like, you get lost in the Arctic, you're fucking dead. So they were amazing at laying things out, but you can get lost. So I'll talk through day one to get us kind of started, because that was the most extreme day. And somebody sent me in a question on Instagram DM, which was harder, the Arctic or the Sahara? And day one of the Arctic was harder than all of the Sahara combined. There was no comparison. This was physically the hardest thing I've ever done in my life, bar none. And I would go as far to say that it was probably 10 times harder than the Sahara, partly because of the conditions, partly because of the environment, and you're literally trying to fight with Mother Nature, and partly because I tore my Achilles 84 kilometers from the end and had to just fucking pluck down and try and get over that finish line, which I'll talk about later, and the thoughts that were going through my head to try and finish that when I was in the most pain I've ever felt in my entire life. And day one was kind of a baptism of fire. So it was supposed to be about 50 kilometers, between 50 and 60 kilometers. I clocked in 60 kilometers on my Fitbit, but there was a blizzard on day one. So about 10 kilometers from the home base. So how it worked was, you would have the start line, which was normally, the first day was from a cabin. So nice warm cabin, slept pretty well the night before, as well as you can, knowing you're about to run through the Arctic, and got up for 7 a.m. to start running. And day one, you're effectively running from different checkpoints. So checkpoint one, checkpoint two, which are like heated teepees where you either have medics working there, or the indigenous tribe, the Sami people, or the beyond the ultimate team. So they're just kind of checking up to make sure there's no issues with frostbite, no issues with hypothermia, or physical injury. The three things that I identified before I went to the Arctic Circle was, I always do a post-mortem on things. So our pre-mortem, apologies, on things. So a post-mortem is like what you get after someone dies, and they do a post-mortem and they're like, okay, this is what killed them, da, 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 da. So what I normally do, and I apply this to business and I apply this to life, I apply this to relationships, I apply this to everything. I'm like, what could potentially kill me? You know, I love the Charlie Munger quote that if I knew where I was going to die, I just wouldn't go there. And I did a pre-mortem on this event. I was like, okay, what are the things that are going to stop me finishing this race? What are the things that can potentially put me out, or what are the things that could potentially kill me? So the three that I mainly identified were frostbite, which was when you're out and exposed to the cold, and it got as cold as minus 38 on the coldest day. And when you're exposed to that kind of cold, frostbite is a real risk. And effectively, several people who have ran through the Arctic or Antarctica on the other side have lost fingers and toes because of frostbite. It comes on very, very quickly. You get what's called frost nip first, and then frostbite takes over. And then before you know it, you've lost your finger or your toe, or your ears or your nose, which are other potential weak points that can give you a problem if exposed to the cold for prolonged periods of time. And I identified frostbite as a major thing. So I made sure my kit covered my fingers and toes particularly. So I had three sets of gloves. My gloves were like more expensive than my shoes. My outer shell gloves were like 150 euro because I was so wary of frostbite being a problem. And that puts you out. You know, I made the decision before this race that, similar to the Sahara, that I was going to either leave in an ambulance or a helicopter, or I was going to finish. And that commitment, these things, I get asked regularly, how can you set up these challenges and do it? And it's completely relative, because you listening may have a completely different challenge. It may be showing up a different way in a relationship. It may be getting up an hour earlier. It may be prepping your meals the night before. It's completely relative. But generally, giving yourself a plan B or giving yourself an out means you're going to take that when times get tough. And I don't give myself that option. There is no plan B. And my plan B was to leave in an ambulance. And I was very, very aware of that. But what that does is it closes off your mind to the point when you know you're going to be suffering. And fuck me, that day three when my Achilles tore, the pain I felt was like nothing else. My entire body was just radiating pain because of my torn Achilles. And if I had given myself an out or had decided beforehand if things go this wrong or if a muscle tears or if something goes, I'll pull out, you will take that. It's too fucking hard not to. And what I generally do myself, and I'm not necessarily saying this is what everyone should do, but it's how you know, I'll speak my story and my truth in the hope that it helps, is I don't give myself that plan B. I commit fully to it. And I was committed to finishing the finish line or leaving in an ambulance. And frostbite was one of those initial fears that I had. The next one was hypothermia, which is the one that can really fuck you. One girl that was running the race as well got pulled out to hypothermia and had to be rushed to a hospital. And that's a real problem because hypothermia can potentially lead to death. And I had an issue in the Sahara. For those of you who listened to episode 150 about running through the Sahara Desert, Marathon de Saab, I had a similar issue in the desert when we were running at nighttime, because if you think about the heat in the Sahara during the day, you know, it can go upwards of 40 degrees, but at nighttime, it's nearly the polar opposite and it's freezing at nighttime. And what happened when I was running the long stage, which is 86 kilometers, it took me nearly 24 hours, I would have been sweating during the day from the heat, but then when the cold came and the night dropped, when I stopped to refuel or get some water, my body started to shake and I started to shiver. And there was medics in the Sahara and they said, you need to just keep moving. They're like, if you stay here, you're going to get hypothermia. You need to keep moving. And I had to kind of keep going until the sun came back up. And then I was able to kind of calm myself back down again. And my body kind of regulated its core temperature. You don't have that luxury in the Arctic. That was what makes it so difficult. Somebody asked me, when they asked what was harder, the Arctic or the Sahara, the Arctic is so much harder because of the conditions. You can't rest at any stage. You don't get a rest. It's too dangerous and it's too cold. Like when it hit minus 38, like I remember at one stage I stopped to, you know, go to the toilet, and about 15 seconds after stopping, my whole body started to shake from the cold. You just weren't able to stop for any considerable amount of time or you'd freeze. Whereas in the desert, as hot as it got and as hard as it got, if you had to take a breather, you could take a breather, where you didn't get that luxury in the Arctic. So you were moving. And most of the days, the shortest I was out was 14 hours. The longest I was out was on day 4, which was 19 hours. So you're running and moving and trekking and going through the snow for 19 hours. And your body is just absolutely broken. And it's the conditions are so dangerous. You're never switching off in the Arctic. And in the Sahara, there was times when you'd have like a flat piece of sand and you could move pretty quickly on it. And you could let your mind go to other places and you could start thinking about things and you'd be okay. You couldn't do that in the Arctic. There was too much danger. In the pre-race briefing by Chris, who runs Beyond the Ultimate, he spoke about that the difference between life and death in the Arctic is as short as 15 minutes. He goes, you're feeling a bit cold for 5 minutes. He goes, next thing you know, you have hypothermia or frostbite 5 minutes later, and 5 minutes later, you're dead. So between the point of feeling completely fine and perfect and 15 minutes, you're dead if you don't look after these things that are within your control. And hypothermia was one of those. So what I did was I had Merino wool, which is like breathable specialized kit for skiers. I had a second chain of base layer. So every time I would go into a teepee after a checkpoint of 10-12 kilometers, if I was sweating, I would change that base layer. That's effectively how hypothermia can really get you, is if you're sweating and then the temperature drops and you get cold or you stop moving, your whole body just starts to shake and you get hypothermia. So what I did was I kept changing my base layers. So what I was trying to avoid that. Again, a pre-mortem on, right, what could put me out or what could kill me? How can I avoid and guard against that? And then the last one was physical injury, which is a weird one because it's not the one I thought of beforehand. It wasn't until I got out into the Arctic and actually fell on the first day. And at one point I was running through snow and I fell through the snow and it came up as far as my hips and I wasn't able to get myself back out. I had to get Simon, who was with me, to actually physically pull me out of the snow. And I was just thinking there going, Jesus Christ, if he wasn't here, I'm fucking stuck in the snow at minus 20 degrees. So that very, very quickly became a conscious thought that, right, physical injury is a real problem here. You slip on the ice, you go through snow that's softer than you think, and you break your leg and you're physically out. And in the Sahara, if worst case scenario, if you fell down a sand jebel or a mountain, yeah, fair enough, you'd break your leg or break your hand and you'd have the heat and obviously you'd have to avoid scorpions and snakes, etc. But for the most part, you could wait there until a medic came. You don't have that luxury in the cold. If you break something in the cold, you need to be very, very hopeful that somebody on a ski mobile or one of the Sami people, the indigenous tribe, would come by and would be able to save you. And because of that, your brain never switches off because you're constantly rehashing, right, is everything covered for a frostbite? Right, am I sweating too much for hypothermia? Right, because the thing with the sweating for hypothermia was you had to move at the right pace because if you didn't move fast enough, you'd get really cold. And if you move too quickly, you'd sweat. And then as soon as you started to slow down because of soft snow that you'd have to trek through or because you were tired, you were at the risk of hypothermia. And then there was physical injury. So you had to watch every single place you put your foot. And because of that, your brain for the entire 5 days was never off until you got into like a wooden hut, which was where we slept each night. You'd run from one place to another and sleep in this wooden hut on the ground mostly, which is very difficult after 14 to 19 hours of moving, running, walking, trekking. Your whole body is broken and you're sleeping on the floor in a wooden cabin, which was actually kind of nice when the fire was on. So you'd come in and light a fire, you'd warm up your clothes if they were wet, but fuck, it was cold in the morning. And I had like a minus 20 sleeping bag, but Jesus Christ, I'd wake up in the morning and I would just be shivering from the cold. And you're like, okay, need to keep moving. And you'd get up, put on your kit, and you'd go again. And that's kind of why it was so much harder. So day one, even though we kind of guarded against everything from the pre-mortem, we ran into a blizzard on day one. And hopefully I'm going to have videos out, and I can't announce this just yet, just in case it hasn't all come through, but a little documentary that's going to be done on the Arctic about the blizzard on day one. Because what happens in the Arctic is the sun drops at about 4:30. So it rises at about 9 a.m. and it drops at about 4:30. So you're running quite a lot in the dark. And that's very difficult because you can't see anything ahead of you. You have a head torch on, but you can kind of only see the 6 inches in front of your face. And that's fucking hard when there's 20 kilometers to go and you're just moving and trekking or running, or depending on the terrain, you could run and move pretty quickly on the ice. But like the heavy snow that was coming up to your knees, you're just trying to move through it. And so you would vary your pace based on the terrain that you're on, because obviously the Arctic, it's not roads. You're not running on the same piece of terrain the whole way through. And what happened the day one was we got caught in a blizzard. So that blizzard basically meant that you could see nothing. So I had goggles on to protect against the snow flying into your face. The temperature had dropped to minus 20, minus 30, and you're moving through this terrain. And you're moving through the blizzard, hoping it will pass. And it's weird because you go into full fight or flight mode. Looking back now, I'm like, that's fucking crazy. Like, when I look back on the video, I've got a 12-second clip or a 15-second clip on my phone before the phone froze over. And it shows the blizzard. And looking back, you're like, Jesus Christ, there's a very high risk that you could have died in that blizzard. But you go into full fight or flight mode. It's so weird what happens when you put your body and mind and physical presence into some challenge. You just do it. And that's one of the reasons that I love setting challenges for either myself and for anybody listening. I recommend doing it. I'm not saying to run through the Arctic, but whatever challenge you set, to run from 5 kilometers to 10 kilometers on a treadmill, to move from 100 kilo squat to 150 kilo squat, or whatever tangible goal you set, it allows you to keep focus. And when you keep focus on what it is you're trying to achieve, it makes it a lot easier to make decisions around that. When you're in a blizzard at minus 20, minus 30 running through the Arctic, you're not thinking about anything else except for putting one foot in front of the other and moving forward. You're not thinking about anything else other than hitting your end goal of getting home, where there's going to be a fire, hopefully, where you're going to be safe from the elements and you're going to be able to semi-recover and get some food or water on or whatever it is you need for recovery. It really keeps things simple. And the reason I loved Marathon des Sables, running in the Sahara so much, was that long day, the 86 kilometers, which took me 24 hours, was a physical representation of how you hit any goal. You put one foot in front of the other and you keep moving forward. And the Arctic was the same for fucking 230 kilometers. You put one foot in front of the other and you keep moving forward. And that's how day one went. The blizzard came. Day two was another 52 kilometers. And then fucking day three came. And I didn't feel right waking up on day three. My heel was playing at me towards the end of day two, about 10 kilometers from the end of day two. I was already in, you know, about 100 kilometers in terms of distance covered, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, depending on the accuracy of the Fitbit. But my heel was really playing up, and it took me ages to get to the start line to get going. But about 5 kilometers into day three, my entire Achilles tore, and it took me nearly 3 hours to get the last 10 kilometers for the first checkpoint. And I remember Simon even talking to the medics there, and he's like, I'm not sure if he's going to be able to finish. And I talked to the medic, and she's like, yeah, it's your Achilles. And I was like, it's radiating pain. I was like, it's shooting up my leg. It's giving me a fucking headache. I was like, it's just so much pain. And she was like, yeah, it's probably your Achilles. It's inflamed, or it's probably torn now. And I was like, okay, I'll just try and get to the next checkpoint. And I took some painkillers and I took some caffeine. I had intentionally saved my caffeine for when I needed it. So what I do before these events is I normally take a week off any caffeine, coffee, to try and prime my body and receptors to be able to utilize it when I use it. I treat caffeine very much like a drug. And I took it on day three, and I took it with some painkillers, and that was enough to get me moving. And I was able to kind of make kind of decent speed, even though I was pushing through the pain. And I was very, very aware that every step I took was probably tearing my Achilles a little bit more. And what happens, and if you've ever got an injury, which I'm sure everybody listening to this, you've suffered some injury at some stage, when you power through it, you start to get this super compensatory effect everywhere else, where everything else starts to compensate, trying to effectively make you move. But even though you're moving, your biomechanics are moving in a way that's unnatural to your body. So I was running and moving in a limp, which meant that my knee started to throb, and then my glutes started to like get really painful, and I had a tear. I ripped all the skin off the back of my heel on my right foot. There's a video on that as well that I'll hopefully upload. I took all the skin, the first three layers of skin off the back of my heel from where my snowshoes were catching me. So I was running in a very weird duck-like way where I was kind of hobbling from side to side. And I had told Simon, I had told the medics that I wasn't pulling out of the race. That wasn't an option. We were 84 kilometers from the end at this stage when I got talking to one of the doctors who is British Marine doctor, so I can't say his name. And he said that if your Achilles ruptures, we're going to have to rush you to hospital. And I told him I was finishing. I told him, well, if it ruptures, it ruptures. It'll heal. And that was kind of the turning point where I had made the decision that if it ruptures, fuck it, and it falls off, unless it's frostbite or hypothermia and could potentially put my life at risk, I'm going to finish this. And you get different things when you expose yourself to different elements or different experiences or different circumstances. And I came back from the Sahara last April, and I remember all my limitations had been broken down in terms of, I realized that every limitation I'd ever created was self-created. And my entire mind opened up to everywhere else where I was holding limitations for myself. That's not what I got from the Arctic. What I got from the Arctic was a reinforcement that I can physically do anything I set my mind to personally. And I don't like saying that in terms of, oh, fucking look how good he is, but da-da. Not that. It's what I got. It's my truth. But what I really got was my relationship with pain has really transformed since coming back. And I'm a big believer that pain is temporary. I know it goes away. And I had to keep repeating to myself that yes, this hurts, and fuck, about 60 kilometers from the end, the pain was like nothing else I've ever felt. My Achilles was aching, my knee was throbbing, my fucking head was pounding from the pain my body was in, and I just had to keep telling myself this would go away. Pain will go away. It might take a day, it might take a week, it might take a month, it might take a fucking year, but this pain will go away. I was like, if you quit and you pull out and you finish, I was like, you have to live with that forever. I was like, that's going to be with you forever because you couldn't handle the fucking pain. And my relationship with pain transformed. And I had Tom Otten on the podcast recently, and he spoke about a knee injury that he got in the 134-kilometer UTMB. And how he just pushed through it and how his body kind of clicked back into gear. Now, my body never really clicked back into gear, but I held his thoughts in my head. If you haven't listened to that podcast, I highly recommend it. And about just mindset and the ability to develop that fuck it mindset and just push through pain and push through obstacles, realizing there's always another mountain to climb. And I remember there was points when everything just radiated pain. And I just had to keep reminding myself, this will go away. And I'm recording this exactly a week after I got home, and I'm still not right. My body, for the first week, I thought I broke my entire body. My everything ached, my Achilles was throbbing, and everything through my body was just aching. But it goes away. Like, even a week later, I feel better than I did last week. And this time next week, I'll feel better than I do today. And this time in 2 weeks, I'll feel significantly better than I do today. Pain goes away. And it made me realize that my ability and our ability as people to handle pain, it's there. And we can fucking do it if we decide to handle it. And I have a very different relationship with it now. And yeah, it was physical pain. But I came back and made me realize that I could probably deal with any sort of emotional or mental pain as well. Because when you kind of put yourself into the crucible of hell like that, where everything is screaming at you to quit, everything is telling you to stop, and you keep moving forward, you get a very, very different relationship with that feeling. And it's what made it so hard. And the reason I share that is because when you're very clear on what your end goal is and you don't give yourself a way out, you don't really have a choice. And when you leave yourself with no option but to succeed or to hit whatever goal you set for yourself, it's inevitable that you're going to get there. By all means, if something terrible happens and it potentially puts your, you know, livelihood or your life in general at risk, yeah, don't be fucking stupid. But pain goes away. And knowing that in a week, in a month, in a year, it'll fucking go. But if you quit and you stop, that never goes away. That fucking will eat at you for fucking months and years. I did a race in Barcelona in November, which was supposed to be a 76-kilometer ultramarathon. And I timed out. I went the wrong way, got mixed up with the relays and went the wrong way and ended up cutting short at 52 kilometers. And that fucking ate at me for weeks. Partly because I was annoyed that I didn't read the race review beforehand, that if there was a relay running at the same time, because I would have been more conscious of it. So I was unhappy with myself that I wasn't prepared as well as I could have been. And I kind of rocked up thinking, yeah, fucking 76K, I ran 86 in the desert, I can do this, no problem. But I timed out and missed it. And that fucking ate at me for 3 weeks because it was my fault. I wasn't prepared. I didn't go in there committed to making it work regardless of what happened and staying on course towards the end goal of hitting the finish line. I wasn't committed to it. But the failure of that was the seed for the success in the Arctic, because I made sure I had everything covered going to the Arctic. And I've spoken in the past, and I'd be an absolute hypocrite if I didn't talk about this, that every failure you have is the potential seed for future success if you allow it to see it and learn from the mistake. And I made so many mistakes in Barcelona. I wasn't prepared. I didn't follow the track right. I didn't go there with full commitment to get to the finish line regardless of what happened. I kind of just rocked up. I didn't let that happen in the Arctic. I was committed to either leaving in an ambulance or getting to the finish line. I was prepared in terms of my proper kit and nutrition and fueled my body as well as I could. And doing that gives you a kind of confidence that, right, if shit goes bad, which it will go bad, because that's how fucking life is, obstacles will come up in your way. That's what happens. Relationships turn bad. Business gets hard. Fitness is difficult because you've got to eat your meals and do your training sessions and life gets in the way. Fucking shit is hard. But when you're focused on the end goal and you control everything you can control, it makes it significantly easier because you build confidence knowing that I've done everything I can do and everything else is outside of my control. I spoke with in an interview with Extra.ie before I went that he was asking the interviewer, how was I nonchalant or very relaxed about the whole thing? I said, because there's nothing else I can do. I physically train my body to the best of its ability. I have all the kit that will hopefully help and serve me in the Arctic. I have my nutrition dialed in and I know how to fuel my body. I've literally controlled everything that's within my control. Worrying about anything else now would be a waste of time. You know, I love the Seneca quote that worrying is a waste of energy twice. Because if you worrying is suffering twice. Because if you worry, you suffer at the time when you're actually doing the physical thing or mental thing that's difficult. And then you suffer the second time by worrying about it in advance. It's a waste of energy. So I chose not to worry about those things that were outside my control and just focusing on the things that were within my control and then let the chips fall where they fall. I can't control how cold it gets. I can't control if there's a blizzard. I can't control any of these things, but you can learn to deal with them when they come. You know, when you approach everything like that and you realize that have the end goal in mind that it's not going to be easy, because if it was easy, everybody would fucking do it. You know, if it was easy to set up a business, everyone would do it. If it was easy to be in an amazing relationship where you feel fulfilled, everyone would do it. If it was easy to be in amazing shape and feel healthy and energized all the time, everyone would do it. You're not fucking everyone, because everybody, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably already one of those people who's like, I'm going to be a better version of me. I'm going to find tools, tips, or tricks. If you're even listening to this, how can I apply this to my life and make my life better? You're already one of those people with that developing mindset or that growth mindset of how can I improve? How can I be better? How can I be stronger? How can I build my mental toughness? You're already probably asking those questions, and I'm hoping to be able to serve and give some tools and tricks to do that. But you're not like everybody else, because there's other people who will go along to get along and will make excuses and will come up with fucking every excuse in the book. There is no fucking excuses. You either find a way or you find an excuse. You can't do both. Making excuses for life being difficult, for not having what you want, is victim mentality, and you fucking choose that. I spoke about this in a random episode of the podcast last week with Paul Germany, that the reason, I hate using myself, but you're your own best example, because I feel like I sound like a twat when I say this sometimes, but the reason that I'm able to develop that mental strength and mental toughness is because I was so mentally weak for so long. And I made the choice to not be a victim anymore. I made the choice to not let the world dictate how I feel, how I am, and what happens to me. I made the choice to not let other people's opinion dictate the direction of my life. I made a fucking choice to not be weak anymore. And as a result, I got stronger. And then I started to set challenges for myself, small at first. My first ever run was a 2-kilometer run that I thought I was going to get sick. That was in August of 2017. That was not that long ago. And I just got back from the Arctic after running 230 kilometers, 86 of which was on a torn Achilles. You build mental strength. You build it by doing the right things every day. But you have to identify if you're weak in areas, fucking own that. There's nothing wrong with being weak, but there's something wrong if you are weak and you're not owning it and making a decision to control and change it. Own it, control it, and change it. That was the only difference. And the reason I get animated and the reason my voice gets more fired up when I say this is because if you had told me 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, that I would do these challenges or I would do these things, I would look at you like you're crazy because I wasn't mentally strong enough. I didn't have the belief in myself, but it comes making a decision to own the fact that you're fucking weak in some area of your life and you can choose to change it and make yourself stronger by doing the right things every day. When somebody asked, how tough mentally was it to do the run? I told them that it was 80% mental. And that's a very accurate description of the Pareto distribution, 80% mental, 20% physical. And the reason I said 80% mental was because if you've ever ran a marathon or you've ever ran a 10K or you've ever done a leg workout where you were really sore after, or you've ever done any new training program where your body responds and you're in pain, you're going to be sore. And the day one was 50 to 60 kilometers. You're broken. I was broken by day two. That's so much distance in an unfamiliar terrain with elements that you're not used to dealing with. I live in the west of Galway, in the west of Connemara, out in Galway, in the middle of, you know, there's 200 people in my little village. And I'm not used to snow. I'm not used to ice. I'm not used to that terrain. So moving in those elements was a lot more difficult than normal because your body's just not used to that environment. It's literally muscle confusion because you're not used to running in snowshoes. You're not used to running with certain amount of layers and then your food on your back. This is a self-sufficient run. So I had all my food. I was 100 kilos starting, 85 kilos on my body weight, and I had just under 15 kilos on my back with water, with all my food. And that's not a normal training environment. Your body's not used to that. So after day one, you're physically broken. And then the next 180 kilometers, 170 kilometers, it's mental because you're already physically destroyed and you're relying on something else to carry you through. And I did a podcast last year, which was one of my most popular podcasts, on how 8 critical habits for building mental toughness. And I'll link that in the show notes in this episode on briankeenfitness.com. And that was one of my most popular downloads because it's what I live and breathe, because I had to find tools that allow me to develop that mental toughness, because I wasn't mentally tough enough to do things that I needed to do based on how I felt. For so long in my life, I did things based on how I felt. If I felt like training, I trained. If I felt like eating well, I ate well. If I felt like not training, I didn't train. If I felt like not eating well, I didn't eat well. And then I learned that successful people do what they have to do, whether they feel like it or not. And when I learned that and started to apply it daily, it made me mentally tougher. And I don't want anybody listening to this podcast to ever put me, or anybody else for that matter, on a pedestal that they can do that, I could never do that. Yeah, you probably couldn't do it tomorrow, or you probably couldn't do it next week if you've never ran in your life. But you could do anything you set your mind to if you physically prepare yourself and build the mental toughness required. What happens with mental toughness, and I'm not saying that either for people to run through the Arctic or run through the Sahara, your mental struggles are going to be different for you. The reason that I had to develop it was that I dealt so long with self-induced anxiety or self-imposed prisons of anxiety, where I was constantly worrying about things that could go wrong. I had my own issues with self-imposed depression as a teenager, with some, you know, emotional trauma that I had to try and deal with. And I was sick of being weak. I was sick of being a victim. And challenging myself and building up that mental toughness and the self-discipline to do the things that I have to do, whether I feel like it or not, has made me more grateful and made me happier as a person. And one of the biggest mistakes that I made in the past was confusing happiness and comfort. And they're not the same thing. Some of my happiest moments have came at my most uncomfortable. And it's easy to go through life confusing the two things. You think warm fire, nice couch, watching your favorite show is happiness. And yeah, it might be happiness. But don't confuse comfort and happiness. I know I enjoy a warm fire, watching Netflix on the couch, chilling with my daughter Holly, you know, watching Monsters, Inc. or watching Toy Story. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's the epitome of happiness for me. But it's even sweeter when you compare against the times when you weren't feeling good, when you were physically suffering in the cold or in the heat, and you didn't have a roof over your head, and you didn't have 4 walls, and you didn't have enough food in your stomach. And when you're able to compare it to those times, it makes it even sweeter. But you build up mental toughness by doing the right things daily. That's what I spoke about in that podcast on mental toughness. And the reason I get up, and I have my anchors, I have my mental toughness anchors. I speak about this in my new book that'll be out later this year, The Life Mindset, that I have my mental toughness anchors. One is getting up early in the morning. Like, I get up at 4 or 5 a.m. every morning because I hate getting up in the morning. I'm a night owl by nature. If I was left to my own devices, I would go to bed at 1 or 2 a.m. and I'd get up at 9, 10 a.m. Like, that would be my general if left to default. But I had to start mapping my actions to my ambitions. I had ambitions that were greater than the actions that I was taking. And I realized I had to start getting up earlier to get more things done. My daughter was born. Holly's going to be 4 the end of May. When she came along, I was like, right, I need to get up earlier because I need to get my work done before she wakes up. So priorities changed. And as a result, I had to change my actions to map my ambition. But getting up earlier also doubled as building mental toughness because I hate to do it so much. And then I doubled that over with running every day. So nearly every training day, with the exception of now because I'm injured, is I run because I hate to run. And people will watch, you know, the advice I generally offer is do something every day that makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable. And for me, that's running. I love weight training. I will do HIIT workouts and weight training all day. I love that style of training and I'll probably do it until the day I die. But I wouldn't run. If it didn't develop the mental toughness that it gave me, I wouldn't do it because I fucking hate it. Every step on the treadmill until I step off and every time I step outside the door until I step back in, I hate every single second of every single kilometer of every single race or training session that I run. But it builds mental toughness by doing it. Doing that and leaning into uncomfortable situations. I spoke about my first book, The Fitness Mindset, about leaning into uncomfortable situations, getting comfortable being uncomfortable. When you do that and you make that a habit, you design mental toughness so that if a struggle or a challenge does come your way, you have the tools in order to deal with it. And I put down the 80% mental of running through the Arctic, and it's 80% mental, was down to the fact that in the lead up to it for 6 months, I was getting up early, I was doing my runs, I was doing things that were making me feel uncomfortable. And then it just manifested itself into crossing the finish line at 230 kilometers. And anybody can do that. Not necessarily run 230 kilometers to the Arctic. You may not even want to do that. And it's fucking probably ludicrous for anyone that doesn't run. You're like, what the fuck, you're running through the Arctic. But I get that. But it's relative. Find out what your goal is. What's your challenge? You know, I love the Jordan Peterson philosophy that to build the mental strength so that you can be the strongest person at your father's funeral or the strongest person at your mother's funeral based on your life circumstance. And that's a great thought philosophy because it means that you need to build up that mental toughness so you don't break if life gets in your way. And that's something that I've been very much aware of and trying to deal with over the last, you know, several months, probably a couple of years, that I've spoken on the podcast in the past that if anything ever happened to my daughter or anything ever happened to my mother, the two closest people in my life, that's when I would feel that I could mentally be broken. And I didn't like that vulnerability because that doesn't help anybody. If something happens to my mother tomorrow, I need to be strong for my daughter. If something happens to my daughter tomorrow, I need to be strong for my mother. If something happens to both of them, I need to be strong for myself so that I don't jump off a fucking cliff. I didn't like that vulnerability or that weakness. And don't confuse vulnerability with weakness. I didn't like that weakness in myself and had to make myself mentally tougher so that if the worst situation happens, I'm not going to break. If the worst situation happens, the real fucking problems, like loved ones being taken from you, real problems, not perceived problems like a torn Achilles. They're problems right now, but you can deal with them, they'll go away. Real fucking problems. I needed to be stronger to deal with it because I wasn't. I knew that I would break. If something happened 2 years ago, I knew I wasn't mentally tough enough to deal with it. Now, setting myself these challenges and trying to attack them head on and attacking fears, you know, as I said before on the podcast, behind every fear is a person you want to be. And attacking those fears makes you mentally strong so that if life gives you a fucking sucker punch or life gives you a head blow, you're able to deal with it. And that's the reason I do it. And I'm not saying that you have to run through the Arctic. I want to clarify that a million times. But getting used to being uncomfortable and making yourself mentally tough allows you to have the knowledge that if something really bad happens, you'll be strong enough and mentally tough enough to deal with it. It also works on the flip side of that. For those of you who've listened to that 8 Critical Habits podcast for building mental toughness about my gratitude anchors. And when I get very clear, when I was running through the desert, running through the Arctic, particularly when my Achilles was torn and the pain I was in, I was like, this isn't a real problem. I was like, something could have happened to your daughter or something could have happened to your mother. I was like, I do the negative visualization strategies, you know, the things I talk about at my seminars. And I speak about it in the third book out later this year about negative visualization, that I picture my daughter in a coma. I picture my mom in a car crash. That gives you perspective very fucking quickly and a torn Achilles tends to hurt a little bit less because it's physical pain, but it will go away. And again, I don't know if that will help even using that, but that gratitude anchor is something I use every day that allows me to be grateful for the things I do have. For those of you unfamiliar with negative visualization, it's like the opposite of desire. So I have in my printed a quote on my wardrobe beside my bed that I don't want to have more, I want to desire less. It's a quote from Seneca, the ancient Roman philosopher. And gratitude anchors helps me do that because what would happen for so long, for large periods of my life. I was always looking for the next thing or wanting more and desiring more. And that's fine. And it is good to be ambitious and to work towards the things that you're trying to achieve. I'm a big believer in setting goals and going for it. But there's a thought process and a quote that's always stuck with me that don't stamp on the flowers when you're reaching for the sky, or don't crush the flowers at your feet when you're reaching for the moon. And that basically means that don't forget the beautiful things that are right there at your feet, that are in your life right now when you're reaching and grasping for great things. You know, whatever that great thing is for you, to get your body composition a certain way, to get the job you love, to get a relationship that makes you feel fulfilled, whatever that is for you, don't forget the things you do have. And negative visualization allows me to be grateful for the things I do have. So I'll picture, you know, my mom in a car crash, or I'll picture my daughter in a coma, these horrible things, the worst things that can happen. And then suddenly all the person calling you a wanker on Instagram, or the pain you have in your knee, or, you know, the lack of money in your bank account, or the shitty job, or your boss yelling at you earlier on in the day, it just doesn't seem as important, because you start to prioritize and value the valuables. And when you do that, for me, that perspective really allows me to keep that mental strength daily. And that's something that I apply. It's something that I do every day, and it's something that I did in the Arctic. Another question that came in, and to kind of round up day three and day four, they were very much a blank, if I'm being completely honest. I took a lot of painkillers. I was taking codeine and caffeine to try and get through, and I do not recommend that. That is not a recommendation. But the reality is, you're in the fucking Arctic, and if you can't move, you can potentially die. And I'm a big believer in, you do whatever you have to take to get to your end goal within reason. And that was within reason for me. I don't take a lot of painkillers, so I'm very, very, they work very well for my body when I do take them. I didn't take a lot of caffeine in the lead up to this, so it worked very well when I did take it. And that was enough to kind of push me through the last day three, day four, and then the, you know, 15 kilometers, which actually marked in at 22 kilometers on my Fitbit on the last day to get to the finish line, where I flew the Irish flag over the finish line. And they're a bit of a blur, to be honest. I have Simon Halpin, a massive person to thank, because I was able to lead the first 2 days, particularly because there were so many hills and mountains, and I'm very strong on hills and mountains from my background, obviously having grown up working on a farm, having done a lot of strength work as an athlete on my legs. I'm very strong going up and down mountains. But on day three and four, Simon was able to take the reins and help the pacing. So he set the pace and I followed the pace. I wasn't able to set a fast enough pace to keep my body warm because I was in so much pain, but he was able to set the pace and I was able to stick to it. And again, it's a blur. There's just a mixture of, when your body's in so much pain, you tend to block everything out around you. And that's kind of what happened for those 2 days. Everything hurt. And I was in so, just my mind kind of went blank, and I can't really remember those last couple of days between the mixture of painkillers, the sleep deprivation. You know, you're sleeping 4 or 5 hours every night, and that combination means I can't remember that much. All I remember is rehashing those words that pain will go away, and that it's only pain. I had to tell Simon about 10 times and he'd ask me how I was. I'm like, it's pain, it'll go away. It's only pain. I've got this. And that was, to be honest, convincing myself as much as him, because somebody asked me, did you ever think out there, why am I doing this? And that can't be a thought, even though it did happen. And there was times when those negative thoughts come into your head, but what you focus on is what will expand. And I had to ask myself and put that thought out of my mind, because I would ask myself, is this thought entering my head helping me hit the end goal? And as soon as it was a negative thought that would enter my head, that was like, why the fuck are you doing this? You're in pain, quit. Nobody's going to fucking care that you left at 150 kilometers. You've got further than most people. All these fucking negative thoughts that are just justifying the excuse. And that's the thing, you can justify it. You know, you can literally justify it to yourself, and it's a good excuse. And there's very few people in the world that if you told, yeah, I did 150 kilometers and I tore my Achilles in the Arctic, most people would be like, yeah, fucking good job. I know someone said it to me, I'd be like, yeah, you probably made the right decision. So you can justify it. But I would have fucking known that it was me that pulled out. I would have known. And I said to Simon, I was like, unless a medic pulls me, I'm not finishing. I'm not pulling out of this race. I'm going to get to the finish line. And I had to catch those thoughts when they'd enter my head. And again, when you're very clear on the end goal of what it is you want to achieve, ask yourself, is this thought entering my head helping me hit the end goal, or is it doing the opposite? Is it actually working in the opposite direction? Because if it is, you need to fucking get that thought out of your head, because what you focus on is what's going to expand. And I was very, very aware that if I asked the question, why am I doing this? Or, you know, gave myself an option to pull out, you would take it. And I think that works. And that's something that regardless of what area of your life you're struggling in, ask yourself, is this thought in your head helping you hit the end goal? The relationship you want, the body composition you want, the business you want to be in, the job you want to do. Are these negative thoughts that are entering my head helping me hit that end goal? And I'm a big believer in the Buddha quote that the biggest enemy normally lives between your two ears, or you can't have your biggest enemy live between your two ears. And mastering that, and that's something that I tried to do in the preparation for this, was every time a negative thought enters my head, and I still do this to this day, I ask myself, right, is this thought helping me with my end goal? Is it helping me grow my business to help and serve more people? Is it helping me get my body to the position it needs to be in to run through the Arctic? Is it helping me become the father or the son or the partner or the person that I want to be? If the answer is no, then I take that thought out of my head and I focus on something else, because I know that that's what's going to expand. And that's something that really helped me. When somebody asked what was the hardest part of the challenge, that was a very, very difficult part and something that I had to stay on top of, because it's very easy to let those negative thoughts creep in. And sometimes they're masked. Like, negative thoughts can be masked as justification, you know, and you're disguising fear, disguised as practicality. And that's one of the things that I have to try and guard against in my everyday life, you know, fear disguised as practicality. Because if you start to focus on, shit, my Achilles is torn, shit, maybe it'll get rupture, shit, maybe I'll die in the Arctic if it ruptures, you start to focus on that and you start weaving a story in your head, then that's what's going to expand and then that's what's going to become your reality. And before you know it, you quit and you've been pulled out and you're like, fuck. 2 weeks later, 2 months later, a year later, you're like, fuck it, why did I do that? And that thought process and understanding that was one of the hardest challenges that I had to face, because it's something that I did for so long and it's kind of an automatic habit I have to guard against, where I disguise fear as practicality. I've spoke about this in business episodes, where the reason it took me so long to start my own business was because I was constantly disguising fear as practicality. I was working full-time as a primary school teacher, getting a good, decent wage in a respectable job with good holidays, and I never made the jump into a fitness business or into a business that, you know, made me tap dance to work every day, because it was fear, but I disguised it as practicality. Every time I would feel a little bit afraid about starting my own business, I'd be like, well, you know, I'm making good money as a teacher, decent money as a teacher, it's well respected as a job, you know, I've got good holidays, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I would just create all these practical reasons why I wouldn't make the jump. But that was fear that was just disguised as practicality. And that same thing can happen when you do these physical challenges. You can make up stories and have all these practicality and justifications of, well, I'm injured, well, I'm hurt. It's like, okay, well, what the fuck do you do now? Like, that is one of the things that I'm most grateful for, that I think if I was to guess, and I'd ever know, because it's not until a couple of months after these challenges do you really see the person you become off the back of it. And I think it's probably going to be that I'm very aware now that physically, your body is so much more capable than you think it is, or than you think it can do, or can do so much more than you think it can do. Because at 86 kilometers from the end, I was done. I was fucking broken. It's so much pain that I can't even think of the words to describe it. Everything was aching. I couldn't eat. I felt sick. There was one point where I couldn't even stomach any food because the painkillers mixed with pain, mixed with caffeine. I was just feeling like I was going to spew and get sick. But your body keeps moving if your mind tells it to. And as a result of that, I have a very, very different relationship with what I think my body is physically capable of doing. And it also makes you question that you're not done when you think you're done. You can go further than you think, but you have to make the decision to do that. And I don't know will it show up in other areas of my life, but I think it's possibly what I'm going to get from this on reflection. There's a couple of other things that I'm going to touch on before I close out this episode. And these are questions that came in from Instagram, from social media. And one was why I did it. And why did I sign up to run 230 kilometers through the Arctic Circle? And I kind of talked through a couple of reasons today. But the main reason was I wanted to see if I could do it. And this is something that's been kind of fresh in my mind recently, because a lot of people that I have an upcoming mastermind that I'm working on, people that have attended my business seminars, I haven't opened it to the public just yet, and people I'm working with in different programs with their limitations on what they can and can't do. And the reason I signed up was I wasn't 100% sure if I could do it. And this was very similar to the reason I signed up to Marathon de Saab, the 250 kilometers, six back-to-back marathons in the Sahara, was when you set a goal. I think personally, the key to any goal setting is to set something that's just ahead of your reach and what you think you can do. And there's a great book by Mikhail Shekhetsmihalyi. It's called Flow. Flow state is like they say for athletes or musicians when you're in the zone. Flow state, you lose all track of time. And you tend to enter flow state when you're attacking a goal that's just out of your reach. They used to teach us that when we were working with kids, when I used to teach, you know, fifth and year five, year six, you know, 10, 11 year olds in school, that you always had to challenge your higher ability children just above their reach, because that's what put them into a flow state. That's what put them into a state of where they'd lose track of time working on whatever challenge it was. If it was too easy, they'd do it and they'd get bored. If it was too hard, they'd switch off because it was too difficult. When you're setting a goal, you have to hit it or aim it just a little bit further than you think you can achieve. And I want to round out today's episode with a call to action on what goal are you going to set that is just out of your reach? And not something ridiculous. If you never ran, probably don't set the goal to run 230 kilometers through the Arctic Circle. If you've never been to the gym, don't set a target to squat 300 kilos on your squat or bench 300 kilos on your first goal. But what goal do you have, either fitness or in life, that's just out of your reach, that you're like, I think I could do that, but I'd really need to focus? Set that goal. DM it to me. Text it to me. DM it to me on Instagram, Brian Keane Fitness, or put it on your story and tag my story, Brian_Keane_Fitness. But think about that. The reason I want to end on that note is because I never want people to listen to me or listen to anybody else and think that things are impossible or think that things are unachievable, because you could redefine your impossible. And the limitations that you create are all self-created. I'm not sure what you've got from listening to this podcast, because it's talking through my story of the Arctic. I know myself, the things I've got is my relationship with pain has completely changed. What the physical body is capable of has completely changed. Reinforcements of the ideas of working to the end goal and staying focused on that has been cemented further. But ask yourself, what is it you need to do? Focus on whatever end goal you have and set it just out of your reach, just above where you think you can do it. And then see how all your energy starts to go towards that. And what you focus on is what will expand. So whatever your goal is, either DM it to me, tell a friend, put it on your Instagram stories and tag me. What goal do you have? What level of body fat do you want to get to? What level of fitness do you want to get to? Do you want to go from a 10-kilometer run to a half marathon or a half marathon to a full marathon? What is that you want to do that is just above your reach that you really need to focus on? Because I fucking guarantee you, if you set that goal and cut off all plan Bs and start working towards that, you will hit that goal. Yes, you may need to adjust the time frame. As I said in my first book, The Fitness Mindset, don't adjust the goal, adjust the time frame. You may not be able to hit it within 2 months, within 3 months, but give yourself 6 months, give yourself 9 months, 12 months, whatever it is. Adjust the time frame, not the goal, and adjust the action steps so that you can hit that goal. Hopefully today's podcast has given you a little bit of insight into that you can achieve anything you set your mind to if you put the action steps in place and you set that goal just above where you think you can hit it. The reason I got through the Arctic Circle, again, incredible people, the medics, the Beyond the Ultimate team, Chris, Will, the team that organized, the Sami people, the indigenous tribe who made sure that we were safe on the run, and Simon, who, as I said earlier, is the epitome of if you want to go far, go with the right people. He is an incredible mindset. He pulled me through when I was struggling. He was setting the pace for me, so physically he was able to help me, and a walking testament to what the mind can do if you surround yourself with the right people. I'm so big on having the inner circle of people who move you forward and cutting out the negative fuckers who pull you back, because when you do that, your life becomes better, you become stronger, you become mentally tougher, but you have to make the decision to do that. If there's something in your life that's not right now, if there's something in your life that you're unhappy with, you need to change it. If you don't like who you are, you're not a fucking tree. You can move, but you have to put the action steps in place. You have to decide the people you want to spend time with. You have to decide the jobs you want to do. You have to take ownership of the weaknesses that you have in order to improve. All strength comes from identifying a weakness. When you identify the weakness, you can make it stronger until it becomes a strength. My mind was so mentally weak. And the reason it's strong now, and the reason I know who I am, and I know what happens when I hit the lows, and I know where my mind goes in the darkest of moments, it comes off the back of having been so weak and not being able to deal with it and making a decision to be stronger. If that's you, and that resonates with you, and there'll be some of you who are like, no, I'm good. And there'll be others of you who are like, yeah, that's what I need to hear. Own it. Own it. There's nothing wrong with being weak, but there's something wrong with not making the choice to be stronger, because that's a fucking choice. Being a victim is a choice. Being weak is a choice. Being strong, being mentally tougher, and not being a victim and taking ownership of your life is a choice. You need to decide that. You need to choose it, and then you can do anything that you want. So, again, this was very much a press record and talk episode. I hope it provided value. I'm sure there's a million things that I missed. But as I said, the last couple of days are a little bit of a blur. And I think I got more out of it with the mindset side of things. And I try to contextualize it to whatever area of your life you may be struggling with right now in the hopes that it helps. And as I said, I'm going to listen to this one back, because this was a one-take wonder. Like, one-take wonder, you fucking arrogant git. This is a one-take shot, a one-take podcast where I literally just pressed record and talked, and I hope it provides value. I hope it tells the story a little bit of running through the Arctic. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please tag it on your stories, hit me up on DM on Instagram, tell your friends about it, post it on your wall, whatever it is. If it landed with you and resonated with you, I really, really hope it did. Please let me know, tag it on your stories. Text me or DM me. Text me, fucking age. DM me your goal that you're going to set, or post it on your Instagram stories and tag me. But as always, thank you so much for listening. I'll catch you all next week.